This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Shelby, I wanted to start by asking, how is your plaque psoriasis doing? Is it getting or is it still, like, really flaring in ways? Because if you're having an issue with it, we do have some meds we can put you on.
Oh, good. I'm glad. You know what? We need more.
You can get back to your synchronized ribbon twirling, which I know is one of your favorite activities and you haven't been able to do recently because of the plaque psoriasis. I actually don't know what plaque psoriasis is. Is that a skin condition or is that like condition?
No, it's skin. I think it's like, I don't know. You're the one who brought it up.
Well, it was in the movie. But they didn't explain what plaque psoriasis was in the movie. She was just singing the jingle.
Okay, yeah. So psoriasis is a chronic, non-contagious, immune-mediated skin disease.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, we saw a lot of skin in this movie, and it didn't look like it was impacted by plaque psoriasis.
Yeah. So one night only. Here we go.
Here we go.
One Night Only is famously The Purge, but for sex. The trailer came out. Everyone was like, what the heck is this? From the mind of Easy A and Friends with Benefits and also something
Anyone but
recent.
You.
Oh, yeah. of course.
Our favorite movie. Also from Anyone the mind of the Peter Rabbit movies, which I know we've all loved.
Yeah. And basically, its premise is pretty simple. Premarital sex has been outlawed in the U.S. for every day of the year except one. It's a little throwaway to the slutty liberals out there. And so they get one night a year to have sex however much and with whoever they want. And it's not actually one day. It's one night. It's 12 hours. And yeah, so that's the movie premise. It stars Callum Turner, a.k.a. Mr. Dua Lipa, and another brunette, beautiful starlet who is not the same woman from People We Meet on Vacation.
No, but they do look like... No,
I this thought is it was the same until
Monica
about 20 minutes in.
Barbaro, who was in the... the Timothy Chalamet movie with
Complete Unknown.
Yes, a Complete Unknown. Yes, and she and Monica Barbaro is also,
but I know her from something
of Andrew Garfield.
Oh, she's like a shot of espresso decaf.
She's very pretty. Oh, she was also in Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah. She's the girl pilot.
She's
That's
the girl
right.
pilot.
The girl pilot. No, so they're in this, along with pretty much every other famous person you can think of, just for a quick cameo. We had Z-Way. We have Molly Ringwald. We have...
LeVar Burton, a.k.a. Reading Rainbow host. Julia Fox.
Julia Fox, yeah. There is a Glenn Powell...
Yes.
Reference. There is
one of the Heim sisters is in it.
Yeah, there's
Andrew Burnett, aka cousin, the prince from Snow White, isn't it?
Oh yeah, cousin Greg.
Cousin Greg
is in it. I'm trying to think of other people who popped up, and I was like, why are you here?
The person from People We Meet on Vacation, who I am now looking at her picture side by side,
they look very
remarkably
different.
Similar, is Emily Bader.
Emily Bader is the People We Meet on Vacation actress?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
And she's been in a lot less stuff than
yeah,
Monica Barbaro.
It's like looking at the pictures, of course they're different, but I just went into this movie thinking, oh wow, she's the rom-com girl, but then I realized no, it's a different person, and I support them both having work, and that's beautiful.
Unfortunately, I think this is going to be a situation where only one of them can survive. Like, I think whoever sort of gets like the really big role first is going to steamroll those. Honestly, they both might lose out to Indy Navaretti, who I think is mildly in that area and has had a breakout role. She'll have
to try. I mean, arguably, this is the breakout. This is the win. This is a huge movie. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone has thoughts about it. It's done surprisingly well, even against The Odyssey and Spider-Man.
It did okay.
It did okay. I mean, for a rom-com, for an original... guess I haven't looked at the numbers recently.
It made $5 million out of a $25 million budget.
But, like, what was that anticipated to make?
I mean, I don't think a ton, but, I think this did underperform, and then it got 44% on Rotten Tomatoes currently. So
wow, that has taken a dip since I first looked. I love that, honestly.
People do not like this movie.
And I'm one of them.
And you know who's not one of them?
Oh, let me take a fucking guess.
Me. I am coming out as a one-night-only apologist. I thought this movie was
so
fun. I loved it.
I saw your review.
I was like, everybody needs to be taking this less seriously.
Nobody likes fun anymore.
The number of tweets that I saw about what this is saying about fascism or whatever, I was like, you guys, nobody in this movie trying to say something about fascism.
But they did, Matt. That's how they positioned it themselves.
It's like they wanted to do The Purge, but with sex, which I think is a fun premise and does work. And then
it does not work.
And they probably should have just like made it a completely weird fictional world where it's like this just has always been the case or something, rather than try to shoehorn it into like
that's the problem, Matt, is it wasn't just like, oh, fun premise, let's move on from it. The premise was the through line of the comedy. They were constantly referencing it and talking about it and making jokes with it. And well, so it's not like...
About the premise, yes, but not about the context.
But it's one and the same, because they were constantly joking about like, oh yeah, well maybe the fascists got this one right. Or like, oh, can you believe our police force is doing this? Like, it was about the fascism.
But it was a politician
talking about like, well, it's a badge of honor to be an incel now. Like, it's like, those were... Yeah, we can talk about if it's fun, but I don't want you to, you know, gaslight yourself into thinking that the premise itself wasn't the funny piece that the writer and the director kept circling back to. Like, that was what they found funny.
But what I'm saying is, I don't think that they were like, oh, let's do a comedy that's about like the fascist state. What? How could we figure that out? Oh, it's the you can only have sex one night a year. I think that the having sex one night a year was like obviously the first thought premise of the movie. And then the sort of like fascist stuff came after that as like a reasoning for the
okay, here's my idea. Pitch. Here's my pitch. Okay. One night of sex. Oh, okay. Right. He just got out of a conservative college and he wants to go gangbusters. Oh, it's New Year's Eve and they have a bet with friends to like get the best kiss, you know. Oh, it's Valentine's Day and she's on a mission to finally get laid. Like, there's so much that the rom-com part of this, of like the sort of getting to the party, getting to the climax, if you will, jokes of a couple running into each other on this parallel track of like, you know, will they, won't they, that could have all worked in various different formats.
Yes, but I thought it was so funny, all of like the background things going, like all of the people in the background, all the people like hooking up in weird spots, like I love the world that this was set in. I just thought it was so entertaining to think about like all of the different ways that if you could only have sex one night a year, that would impact things. Like, oh, the only people who are working are married people because they can have sex whenever they want. So like all of the like shop owners and stuff like have to be these old people. Like, I thought it was delightful and sort of clever. And I didn't take any of the, I took all of the like fascist stuff more as like jokes than as serious. Like the part where they're like, thanks Obama. And she's like, well, it wasn't even like what? Like that was way after him. And she's like, ah, whatever. I'm like, yeah. I thought that was so funny.
Right. But can't you also see like why maybe people don't think it's funny?
I mean, I can see why people, like, I think the movie has a very specific sense of humor. And so I could see if the sense of humor of the movie is not your sense of humor, then being like, what are we doing here? Because now this is sort of like ridiculous and I'm not laughing and it's all sort of nonsensical. But I was like on board for the nonsensicality.
Is it a sense of humor if it's just like a white guy who thinks it's funny to like imagine a world of fascism that's uniquely close to some of the policies people want to put forward now? Like, you know, like maybe it's hard to separate. Maybe it's hard to feel like joy at watching a totalitarian state and how quickly people just accept it. Even while they're saying like, oh, repeal, oh, this law is stupid. They're still like making a game of it. And it's still like corporations are like, you know, there's like, yeah, okay. Okay, so there's like a ton of clever, you know, secondary humor happening in the posters in the movie and the way like all these ads are promoting different things. It's very similar to Eternity where there's all this funny, clever comedy happening in the background of like,
yes,
how is this company promoting this night? But that at the heart of it is like the issue with culture today and this like moving of the Overton window and normalizing of like, well, we can't do anything about it, so might as well just have fun with it. Like that does make it hard to enjoy the movie because it is part and parcel of the thing it's trying to mock. It's like normalizing an idea of, well, it can still be fun.
But it was like, I guess I just thought that the whole thing was so ridiculous. Like, I understand that there are things about this movie that are linked to real life things that are going on with fascism. But I thought that the like heightened ridiculousness of all of this, you know, like starting with these like plaque psoriasis commercial jingles, like the whole thing was just at a level of wackiness that I was able to sort of separate from real life circumstances. I wasn't like, oh, like, and if they repeal gay marriage, like this is where we're headed towards a night where we have weird chips embedded in us and we can only have like sex once a year. I was like, it was so far a flung. And also like if it had been a movie where it was like, oh, nobody can have sex unless you're married. And if like you do have sex and you're married, like we're dragging you off and throwing you in prison. Like, I think that would have been, like that would have been more serious, but because this is like, okay, it's one night.
But that literally happens.
Well, yes, but I'm like, because the premise is like, oh, it's one night and you have this tattoo, whatever. This was like more like The Purge to me, which again, like The Purge, like sometimes tries to say something, but the whole premise is like so ridiculous, or maybe even like the Hunger Games too. Like, I'm like, this isn't, I was not inhibited by like any sort of realism in this movie. I was like, this is like, oh, this is a wacky story and I'm enjoying it.
Okay, The Purge might be a bad movie and it might be like a lazy slasher movie, but it's still like its premise is about how this one thing is bad. And this is like literally by the end of the movie, they're like, maybe this has actually helped us get closer and we don't need sex. So it's like hard to be like,
I don't think that's what the movie is saying.
It literally. Okay, so climactic moment. She's about to hook up with her dream band guy And he's like giving his speech about how there's something romantic about what the fascists have done, because now it's about the choice of who you spend this one night with. Okay, yeah, it's kind of a joke. He's a laughable character. But then the end of the movie, oh, we finally have, we have 12 minutes left. We can finally do it. And they both are like, you know what? I don't want to rush this. I don't want to force this. It's not about the sex. We're actually like really going to invest in ourselves, and we'll use this time, this state enforced time, to just get to know each other. And then the sex will be even better.
I think that that is like, yes, that is what happens, but it's like, if the options are like having like weird rushed sex for 12 minutes with the someone who you just met, or like potentially giving a relationship like more of a swing, like I think that's something that people think about all the time in relationships now, that has nothing to do with whether or not you think sex is like a good thing or a bad thing, or you should have a lot of it or not have it. Like, there's lots of gay people who I know who are having sex all the time with all kinds of people, but mm-hmm. there is, you know, they'll say things like, oh, like, you know, like I'll always have sex on the first date unless like I'm really interested in the person, and then, you know, like I'll sort of like try to wait and like have the first time be slightly more meaningful. And I don't think that that, I don't think the ending of this movie was at all like, you know what? And maybe actually we shouldn't be having sex until marriage. I think it was just like, maybe we don't want our first time having sex to be like in this sweaty lighthouse when we only have like 10 minutes.
Yeah, for sure. But then the problem becomes when it's in a movie that is sort of existing in this very conservative, heteronormative, like gender normative world.
But do you
think that does feel like it has something to say about like...
But do you think a lot of conservative people are like watching this and going like, wow, like that, yes, like
I think is what we want. It's less about like politics and it's more about growing trends. Like even the director said that he removed so much background nudity and sex happening because Gen Z proved to be a pretty prudish audience.
Oh, well,
and they didn't want to see it. And I think that is an interesting trend that we're facing. And that when you have a movie that allows that to dictate some of the themes, that theme continues to perpetuate this growing conservatism, not political party wise, but just like mental wise, of like sex is bad. And I know that's like a generalized term, but I just think that we've had so much media that continues to push this sort of like, we're all too sex forward and we're all too...
Do you think though that Gen Z's like sort of views of sex like comes from a like religious conservative place, or from like a like desensitized sort of like I'm too online sort of place?
I mean, it could be both. Like I don't know if our return to sort of prudishness is always religious. I don't think it's like Jesus wants us to cover our bodies, but I think there is a growing trend where it's like, yeah, maybe it is. I can see this whenever I want, so I don't need it like in this specific media. I don't know, but it's like,
I think it's like people are too online, and it's like there's porn obviously available anywhere, so anyone can watch it at any moment, which I think is its own separate issue. But then also just like, because you aren't like, people aren't used to having these like physical in-person connections as much, like everything is through a screen, then it makes the in-person connections harder, which makes dating harder, which makes sex harder. And it's like, you already have this other outlet for like, you can watch whatever you want. And then also the real world sort of like doesn't compare as well to that, which now I'm, you know, realizing that I'm just going through like Republican, Christian Republican talking points on why you shouldn't watch porn. But I mean, I do think that all of those points are valid to a certain degree and have led to like a lot, you know, it's like if you're on your phone too much and you're watching porn too much, like I think that does have implications in the real world.
Right. Well,
in my mind, like Gen Z not like, there's obviously, there is, like, the weird trad wife, like, devout Christian Gen Z people. But I feel like, in my mind, the swing away from, like, sex and stuff with them is, like, a weird sort of tech issue rather than, like, a morality thing.
I mean, Gen Z is more religious than millennials. Right. It's like there is an uptick, and I think it's all linked and it's all part of the problem. But I think this movie's interesting because I liked the rom-com piece of it. I liked Callum Turner. I liked
Monica Barbaro.
I liked the needle drops. I liked the sort of silly, they keep running into each other piece. But I just found it more and more difficult to, like, sit with the world it was in and to feel that really heteronormative conservative slant to how that relationship played out, because it's very gender normative. She's like, oh, I want connection. I want feeling. I'm so lovey-dovey. And he's like, I need to get some because my girlfriend is going out to get some. Like, there's just, like, a very stereotypical white slant to this whole story. And it purposely called out its own, well, maybe not whiteness, but its own straightness, where it's like the one gay character is her roommate who playfully says, oh, this night's for the straights because we've been skirting your laws since the Bible was written, you know? And it's like, well, what does that mean? Like, what is that? Like, if you're giving me this premise of this world and there is one person who has figured out how to fight the fascist government, I'd rather watch that movie. I'd rather watch the sex club happening on the one night a year, on the 364 nights a year that sex isn't allowed. Like, I'd rather see it's like the same thing of, like, do you want to watch a movie about the outlawing of alcohol, and you're watching the people who are like, well, I guess we just won't drink alcohol, or do you want to watch Great Gatsby and see them going to their little their little places where they can have parties and they drink alcohol anyways? Like, I feel like there's something so conservative in the fact that everyone in this group, even if they're like liberal leaning, even if they're like, oh, this mandate sucks, it's so lame, what, you're a cop and you're spending your time doing this, they're still playing into it. They're still willing to spend $200 on a condom for state sanctioned sex. Like, it's just hard to really, like, allow the humor of the moment to like carry me through these troubled waters.
See, I just thought, I did not find the politics, like, weighing me down in any capacity.
Isn't that part of the problem?
I don't think so. Because I don't think that I'm, like, I agree with what you're saying in a, like, I think we have, like, the same morals in this situation. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that this movie was, like, attempting to say anything about that, like, okay, aside from just, like, funny stuff.
Right, but that in itself is a problem with our culture of normalizing this sort of, like, goofy, LOL, like, meme culture of, like, real life issues.
But like, this isn't a real life issue because this isn't...
But it is because they... Okay, I don't want to get too heated. I know that it's not like, oh, this movie was inspired by the fact that there are large portions of our current government who want to outlaw birth control. And yet, I'm watching a movie where birth control is limited to supposedly condoms. No one ever mentions an IUD here. And it's like, oh, isn't it funny? I don't know. Like, it's like hard to think... Like, oh, wow, we just survived COVID where everyone lost their minds about the idea of being infiltrated by chips if you get a vaccine. And now everyone here has a little biometric data reader, but they get to pick their own cutesy tattoo with it. Like, you know, like, it's just like, yeah, it's not like a sci-fi movie where you're far away in a different future where it's like everyone's organs stopped working and they could only have sex one night a year. Like, it's very much built in our world, and they even playfully have characters fighting about, like, well, this is why voting matters. Like, you know, like, they make it a point to joke about our current climate.
Yeah, I found them all, like, I don't know. I found the jokes all funny. And I think that, you know, it's like there's lots of comedies that are sort of like more like murder related, you know, where it's like it's a there's like horror kind of comedies or like where they're killing people or whatnot. And when I'm watching those, like obviously murder is a thing that is bad. Like we're not supposed to be killing people, like, and that is an issue that is ongoing. But I think I'm able to like separate, like, okay, in this like weird fictional world, like I don't know, it's different. And I understand that, like, yeah, maybe the like I don't know, the issues like are ringing closer to home for you, and so, or for, you know, various people online, and so that's like they don't find it as funny. And I totally get that, because I think there are, you know, there's certain subjects that like I would find funnier than others, mm-hmm. based on like, you know, my life experience. But I don't know. I was like laughing a lot during this. I found it all like very ridiculous. And I think I was able to like pretty easily separate it from anything like happening in the real world, because I felt like it was so ridiculous. Like even the way the characters were acting, like felt very heightened rom-com-y. Mm-hmm. Like it didn't, there wasn't enough like realism in the ether. Like even the fact that they keep like bumping into each other, the fact that like all of the characters are these kind of like crazy people, like, oh, she meets this guy and she has a connection, and oh, he's actually like a like notorious robber who's like stealing all of this stuff, and like has robbed this apartment, and the fact that they end up at the lighthouse at the end, which is just crazy, and that she's like, oh, if there's one person who I wish I could meet, it's this rock star. And then it's like, oh, well, actually he's performing at this party, and now he wants you to perform at this party. Like, mm-hmm. there was just so many things to me signaling like this is a crazy world, that even if there were pieces of it that, you know, have connections to modern day and, you know, the horrible fascist things going on, I was sort of, I guess, able to separate those more easily.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, good for, I'm glad you enjoyed it, but I do think it's like, I mean, the director himself is like, you know, he's going on his Reddit AMAs and he's talking about all the laws they had to think of that aren't in the movie, but like, LOL, what a fun world to play in. So it wasn't just like a premise and move on. Like, I think that the in jokes about like all of it was what was funny to him. And I think it's hard to go from watching Easy A and having this kind of like like sex positive sort of, or Friends with Benefits, like very sex forward. And then to have this play into sort of a more, I don't know, just like kind of nefarious trope of like.
But I found this movie to be sex positive, like in that it was showing how ridiculous a world without sex would be. And that then you get people who are like so like horned up that they're doing like bubble rap, whatever in this, that Molly Ringwald is doing, like, yeah, I don't know. And I thought that the like the sort of like funny implications of the world were interesting quirks. I mean, I think Eternity is a good example. Obviously that movie's not like political, but it's like, okay, if you have this premise where you want this woman to have to choose between like the person that she loved when she was younger and the person who she loved when she was older, like between her two great loves in life, like how do you set up a world that forces her to do that? And then like, what are the rules of that world? And then how do people deal with those rules, and how do people sort of like circumnavigate them? And I think that in Eternity, there is a lot of like humor that is derived from all of those different like nooks and crevices. And if you think, sit here and think about Eternity for, you know, longer than 10 minutes, there's a lot of pieces of it that's like, okay, well, actually that doesn't make sense, and they would probably do this instead, and blah, 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 blah. But so like, yeah, there's obviously lots of things about this world that don't make any sense if you think about them for more than 10 seconds. But I think that yeah, that's sort of like why it worked for me in some ways, because it was like wacky.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Do you think that, like, do you think that this is going to, like, help Mr. Dua Lipa's career?
I mean, I don't think it'll hurt it. I think everyone walked away thinking the stars themselves are charming and there are pieces of this that make for a very watchable, fun rom-com. Like, you take them out, you put them in a Valentine's Day thing, and this mostly works. It's like, they're fun, they're cute, they're hot, and they do their best. I think Callum Turner, I liked him. I think some people find him, like, unlikable or unhot. I don't know. It was, like, working for me.
His big ears.
Yeah. And I love a weird job. And in this, he owns a pizza shop
in Harlem. Which is the original Ray's pizza shop. That's where they filmed at, which is, like, cute. Up on the upper west side. It was interesting, like, the New Yorkiness of the movie, because I kept trying to figure out, like, where exactly they it were supposed crazy. To be in scenes. And it was like, oh, you're just filming, like, wherever you feel yeah, like. Yeah,
they were all over that island. It was, like, insane. They, like, traipsed from Harlem to Brooklyn, like, three times in the movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was so much. Like, it honestly felt like an insult to New Yorkers. It felt like the kind of movie people will analyze and be like, they couldn't make it here in this time frame.
Well, and then it was like they were at a warehouse party, but then you could see New York from the warehouse. And I was like, well, where is that?
Yeah, they were in Brooklyn.
Right. But I'm like, the warehouse parties in Brooklyn are not, like, on the water.
Where is it? Yeah, yeah.
It's like the warehouse parties in Brooklyn are in Bushwick. So I was like, they're like at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and I guess they've rented stuff out. Yeah, I'm like, I try not to pay too much attention to that kind of New York stuff, because I feel like every single New York movie is annoying like that.
And lots at least of love for city bikes.
And at least this was filmed in New York, which mm-hmm. I will say is better than when they make a New York movie that's not filmed here, which the People We Meet on Vacation, not that it was New York, but like, that was number one sin of that movie, was we're supposed to see all these vacations.
No, you know what? The number one sin of this movie was the last scene when Callum Turner turns up with Duncan and the cups are so obviously empty. It was absolutely bonkers to me.
That was
the worst cup acting I've ever seen. It was so like, put water in the cups, like just something to help this man out.
I don't know why they do that. Like,
I don't know.
Are they worried that he's going to drop them and like spill them on like some sort of equipment? Like, is it an insurance thing?
I don't understand
why people have empty cups in movies.
It was so bad.
Like, you know what else? You know what the other thing that really frustrated me was that at the end, when they're in the pizza restaurant, like eating the pizza looks terrible and it looks like it's been sitting there for like 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you guys just have to have a bunch of pizzas like ready to go, you know, just like,
yeah,
like
get a food designer, put one in the oven,
switch the other, like, I don't know, do something, because this pizza looked bad. Yeah. And then he's like, stay in the pizza place. Like,
I know,
eat the rest of the pizza.
Crazy
and she's
behavior.
Like, no, I'm actually good. This pizza is, we've been sitting here for 2 hours. This pizza is not tasty. I do not need this.
Yeah. No, it was, The cup thing was honestly, I haven't seen something like that in a long time. I don't know what it was that like stood out. Like, if I can blame Callum Turner for that, or just the way it was shot. I don't know.
Blame
but
him
it was like so
it.
Noticeable. Yeah,
because he sort of had them both. Like neither of them were like. Because if you get coffee for somebody else, theoretically the coffee is full.
Yeah.
So you can't. So you have to hold them in a certain way because there's like a bun. Because there's liquid in there, and he had them both sort of like tilted. Where if there had been something in the cup, it would have come out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is part of the problem.
Yeah. So that stood out to me.
But I did love all of the crazy product placement in the movie. Ugh. I thought it was so funny, all of the like bad, like the
Duolingo
bad,
and
yes, like, yeah, like, because they, it's the same with like, oh, when the World Cup was happening, and it's like every company, no matter who they are, has to do some sort of like World Cup thing, and it's like, keep you energized while watching the World Cup Duracell batteries or whatever, and it's like, what? Like, like nobody's buying Duracell batteries to support the World Cup. Like, what is this marketing that you're attempting to do? Like, if you're selling batteries, just sell batteries. Like, people buy batteries when they need them. They don't need you to be doing some weird World Cup marketing to sell the batteries. Like, you just have extra time on your hands. And I kept thinking that when they were like going by the equinox and it was like, get ready for the one day of the year, every other day of the year, or whatever.
I am curious. Okay, yes. So you like the zaniness, you're able to like separate it and just like appreciate the in jokes because it's all ridiculous.
Yes.
And then not to beat a dead horse, but like the Barbie movie, you hated because you felt like it was a betrayal, like it was too close. It annoyed you that Mattel was a part of this movie that was supposedly calling out capitalism.
Yes.
But they did it through zany, kooky, silly, over-the-top humor. So what happens to like make you...
I mean...
How?
I think that this movie is in... I understand that my sense of humor is not the same as other people's sense of humor. And we have brought this up on the podcast many times before. I think your sense of humor is similar to Taste in Music. Like, you can't determine it. You're just, like, assigned what you think is funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And as we've talked about before on this podcast, I love, like, a completely wacky... Like, I loved Isn't It Romantic? Like, I love these movies that are like so like bonkers and like throwing things off the wall. And Barbie, I don't think is that crazy. Like, it is a funny movie and there were pieces of it that I liked, but I never, like, Barbie was never as off the wall as this was. Like the when we're starting off with like her singing these like jingles, and then it cuts to the scene of like her walking around, and it's like the beginning of Devil Wears Prada or whatever, where it's like, you know, she's just walking around like New York, and then you realize that it's actually like the Vagiclear jingle that's playing in the background. Like, I just thought that was so ridiculous, and I don't know that Barbie had that same, like, I guess I personally did not find Barbie as funny. So that's number one. And then the thing about the capitalism is I think it had more to do with the, like, if this movie had been made by Republicans and it was sort of like, oh, like Republicans sort of trying to point, like make a joke, but not, I think it would have been, I wouldn't have liked it. I think the thing with the Barbie movie with the Mattel thing was that it was like Mattel sort of making fun of corporations, but then at the end being like, but actually corporations are good. And it was like Mattel is the one who's making that message. Where I don't feel like this, like if this movie has mixed messages and metaphors and things that it doesn't like think out clearly, I don't think it's has like sinister like implications of, oh, there's like a psyop like conservative group that's doing something.
Agree to disagree.
I'm like, is the guy who made it, like, are they, I guess I haven't like read interviews with them, but are they out here like being like, and actually sex is bad?
No, I mean, I just think it's less. Yeah, I don't think you have to be a villain to perpetuate a bad
take. Maybe this is like a better example. It's like, okay, people watch Mrs. Doubtfire now and have all kinds of thoughts about like, like there's anti-trans stuff in there. Like, is this a negative, like bad for like LGBTQ, like marketing, like the Harvey Firestein, like, and his husband? Like, is that a gay trope? Also, like, oh, is this movie sort of like anti-feminist because the Sally Field character is actually like has a job and is trying to be a good mother, and the Robin Williams character is like a little bit of a deadbeat, but then we're supposed to like forgive him just because he like likes his kids, even though he's been bad at stuff. And I understand all of that, like all of those talking points in a vacuum. And I agree with like the politics of the people who are making those sentiments, but I'm also sort of like, well, this is Mrs. Doubtfire and it's a ridiculous comedy. And I guess in that situation, I'm like, I feel like if you sort of poke around too much in things that are supposed to be funny, sometimes you can like do, I'm like, I don't understand what like the point of this is exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which isn't mm-hmm. to say that like, if someone is like, you know what, like I on my principles, like don't like Mrs. Doubtfire because I feel like it's an anti-trans movie, I'm not going to be like, you know, you're wrong, like you have to watch mm-hmm. this. But I'm also kind of like, I love trans people. I'm still like, I don't feel like that this movie is actually anti-trans. I'm going to watch Mrs. Doubtfire because I think it's funny mm-hmm. separately mm-hmm. of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't yeah. feel like this movie was trying to, I don't know, like make fun of people who like might be losing their birth control if Republicans get in power. But yeah. obviously they don't want that to happen.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think this is a polarizing film. And I think it's like, obviously, I understand your point. Like, I know you're not pro-fascism. I just think this movie is maybe not worth the laughs it was getting at the expense of normalizing fascism.
Yes. Well, it certainly wasn't a deep thinking movie. So there, yeah, it's like, I think it bit off more than it could chew, probably coming up with the like political premise of it all. And I sort of wish that it had just stuck with the, like, I don't know, like if it had made the one having sex one night a year premise, like in a, I don't know, like a less political way, or like, I don't know, come up with some other reason for why that was a thing. Rather right. than sort of trying to set it in like the modern America, you know, because mm-hmm. I think even if you had just set it like in America, but like hadn't mentioned like the government at all and was just like, oh, nope, like this is a world where this is the rule, that would have made more sense.
Yeah, except then the characters wouldn't have the same motivations and it'd be a totally different movie.
Well, right.
So that, but I like, sort of, but like, I like the fascism seems like a part of it.
You know, but it's like it's like the scenes in what was the meteorite movie that was on Netflix?
Don't look up.
Where it's like, oh, well, we're gonna die, so we might as well have an orgy. And it was just like this frenzied world of,
yeah.
And that's the thing I liked about this is of like, oh, here's this like weird premise that is then going to make everybody act ridiculous for one evening, because everyone would act ridiculous for one evening if this it was how the world worked. Like, I can only, like, this movie was heteronormative, but I'm like, I can only imagine the nightmare that would be gay people on this night if they weren't allowed to have sex the whole year. Like, crazy behavior.
Yeah, I just think, I would hope more people would be anti one night only 3 years into a fascist, you know,
well,
police
they have
state.
The signs up, they have repeal,
kill
you
me.
Know,
freaking kill me. Yeah, and that's what we're facing, that's what we will get, that's the level of engagement people are bringing to current threats of fascism. And it's, yeah, oh yeah, it's just, yeah, what can we do, we'll just enjoy what we can, YOLO.
I think that there's a difference though in like in I think there's a difference between like fighting fascism and being like constantly undone by the threat of fascism, you know? Like if the world is bad, and you only got one night to hook up with someone, you know, you might as well take it. You got a lot of horned up energy. Can people jerk off in this world? Did we learn that?
Yeah, they can masturbate. It was on their little poster in the jail.
I wish that I could have paused that. There were a couple points where I was like,
it's online. You can look at it.
I guess that's true. And like, there were, especially like some of the signs in the background, I was like, I wish I could read these faster.
Alas. Well, it was all basically corporate lingo normalizing a one day only event. So I think you can imagine it pretty easily.
When I got done watching this movie, I was like, what a delight. This was so fun. I laughed the whole time. And I was like, I just know Shelby's going to hate this. I was like,
And why? Why did you know that? Because like, deep down, you knew, oh, this isn't just a goofy premise. There's actual real world consequences to normalizing things like this.
I thought that you were going to say that it was stupid, which...
Yeah, well, it is.
And I think that if it had been funny, like, I think if you had found it funnier, it would be different. But, like, I also don't think this is your sense of humor, right?
Fascism?
Not fascism. Like, this level of ridiculousness.
I like Eternity. Like, I really found it funny to read the signs and, like, see the little details. Like, I like a little world building. But
Eternity was, like, a great movie.
Like, yeah. But I'm just saying it's like, I think part of what's frustrating is if this movie had just been a rom-com set during Valentine's Day or New Year's Day or something with frenetic energy, then I would have had a different conversation. But there was a gleefulness to imagining a world of fascism without wrestling with the cost of fascism that was very frustrating to watch as someone facing down a threat of fascism. So yeah, it's just like, you can't separate it to me because it existed intentionally within that space. And so I wish they would have given me the movie about the other nights of the year where they had to like figure out how to avoid the dopamine spike. I think that would have been a more funny, zany.
The answer is drugs. Yeah. Is what they would have had to have done. Or like exactly. Cut pieces out of their arm.
Yeah, something. But instead, there's like one character who's like, oh, he's had sex 8 times and we're arresting him. And it's like, is he the bad guy? Oh, he's a bad guy now. He's not a good lover because he loves having sex too much. Like, it was just so, like, buttoned up. I don't know. I just found every choice kind of nefarious. I really did.
I love that you have gotten so far out of Mormonism that now you're like, we need more sex. Everybody,
it doesn't even need to be more sex. Time. But the way I think it's because I grew up in a pretty conservative base that tried to like, oh, we'll like say. Dance around this, like, actually it's better for you if you just like, you know, oh, we're better if we can just like get rid of it. Like, I don't know. Like, it's like there's a familiar undertone of control and abusive tactics that I witnessed that are now too close to find it funny.
I mean, maybe this movie does read differently. Like, I mean, obviously I grew up in a similar setting, but I think that like the way that Christian people or Mormon people, like the way that they talk about sex with girls is very different than the way they talk about sex with guys. And so I imagine that there's more...
And you know what? They should have set this movie in an evangelical church where the preacher says, okay, you know what? We'll give you guys one night. And then that could have been funny.
Because that would have been so funny, actually. Because then you remove, like, that's a great premise.
You remove all the like corporate, oh, we're going to normalize fascism nonsense. And it just becomes about the people. Whereas this is very much about the scenario.
But didn't you think all the corporate stuff was like an indictment of fascism? Like, it was sort of like saying, like, look at all these stupid corporations. Like, obviously they would go along with it and be trying to like.
No, that's exactly right. No, right. Exactly. Yes. It's not funny to me though, that's how quickly tides change and that the powers that be can so easily manipulate markets because it's good for their bottom dollar. But didn't you think it was
like a little bit like satirical?
I think satire has to come from a place and a position of a strong indictment of it. And I don't think, to your point, these people cared that much about the fascism piece.
Yes, I guess that's true.
So no, they do not get, they do not get the satire for dramatic irony. Pass. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
But yeah.
Poor Will Gluck. His movie didn't do well, and it also does not get the fascism pass
exactly,
from Michelle Dean.
Exactly, exactly. And my shit list forever.
But it was edited by a woman.
Wow, good for her.
Oh, Esty Heim did the music for this. I mean, yes. Obviously she was in it. I didn't realize she did the music for one of the seasons of The White Lotus as well. Yes. Here's a question for you. Did you ever read the children's book about the Little Red Lighthouse? Was that a real book?
Yeah, I remember it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, we didn't have that, I don't think.
Maybe it was something I saw once I moved to New York or something. Because I definitely remembered that.
I also was like, I mean, I've ran by that lighthouse a million times. And I'm like, I'm 100% certain that you can't just, as a random person, like, go up inside of it at any moment.
Someone else definitely had sex in it that night and left it unlocked.
Oh, that's a good reading.
Callum Turner probably got his copies, downed both of them, left the empty cups to pick up later, broke into the lighthouse, and jerked off before.
You know, the crazy thing is, actually, I sort of feel like your opinion on this movie is a little bit moot because you are married.
Yeah.
If you lived in this version of fascism, you'd be able to have sex as much as you wanted. I would be the one who was, you know, out here struggling.
No, I would be the guy on the run from the police because they kept trying to tell me what to do with my body.
Right, but they're actually not trying to tell you what to do with your body because you're already married. So they're like, you can do whatever you want, actually.
Yeah, it's just insane.
You'd be the babysitter.
It's insane. I
mean, how did you like that terrible child?
No.
Oh, I thought he was funny. I loved the Andrew Burnap character. LeVar Burton was in it. How dare you?
Yeah, okay. This movie was so white and the humor was so white, Matt.
I thought
you need to sit with that.
I'm like, I don't know that you're the person who gets to make that claim, but
I want you to do some self-reflection on what was being reflected back to you. Okay.
I have never once come on here and tried to say that my sense of humor is sophisticated by any means. But there is a certain level of ridiculousness that tickles me in a way that other, I had to watch that movie Friendship that came the early with like Paul Rudd. And it's like, I sat there stony faced through the entirety of that movie. I did not find 1 second of it funny or enjoyable.
Yeah.
And it's like, this movie, I was like chuckling to myself the entire time. And I don't know what that necessarily says, but it worked on me.
You're ready to take the state's word for, you know, laws coming down the line.
As long as it's funny, I'm, you know, good to go. Unfortunately, in most cases, it's not. And I've yet to see the Republican Party pull off a single thing that's funny. Unironically.
Yeah, it's rough. Rough out there.
Or unaccidentally. A very humorous group of people.
I mean, wacky premises that I can eat up are dinosaur movies set in the current world.
Well, we shall see. We haven't seen it yet. There could be a fascist undertone with the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah. I can't wait, though.
If I had had to have get, like, I mean, I guess, I don't know if I guess I did see a trailer about One Night In, or One Night Only, but it did not register to me that it was a political thing until I watched it. I don't know if that was in the trailer.
What?
Or I just wasn't paying attention.
Like, you just thought it was, like, a magical, like, a parallel universe?
Well, I thought it was like The Purge, you know? And I feel
but The Purge is political, Matt. I need you to sit with that.
But The Purge sort of like retconned politics into it. Like, it was like...
Right. It was a long term.
Well, it was like, and that's part of the reason why the Purge doesn't, why the Purge movies sort of like get worse, but also sort of get better at the same time. Because originally, like it, like there was a law, oh, you only have one night a year to kill people. But it wasn't like trying to do a lot of like parallels to things. And then as time went on and we got to like the first Purge and Purge Election Day or whatever, then it got more like overtly sort of like, oh, it's like Republicans have led us to this sort of thing, which is when the movies get worse, I think, but also get better because they're more ridiculous, such as the one where Marissa Tomei like doesn't do any costume changes, even though she's supposedly in like, you know, it's like set over like 4 days. She's like, nope, I will. And she's only in front of green screens, even though some of the green screens that she's in front of are actual sets that they built, which is crazy. But anyway, I'm getting distracted. Yes, we will be talking about the end of Oak Street next week, which is theoretically not about fascism, but then
hopefully,
never fear, we'll be back the following week to talk about Yesteryear, the Tradwife book, which is about fascism again. So
I don't know. Yeah, I'm excited for that one too.
It's a wild ride.
More political rants from me.
More political rants from you. Have you ever thought about moving to Idaho?
No, I was much too close for that, to that did, for most of.
Did One Night Only make you want to move back to New York at all?
One Night Only was such a fantastically clean side of New York. Oh, it's lovely. And so, no, it was not my New York.
I thought it was pretty, like, realistic for New York.
So sparkly, so well behaved. Even as people were having sex on the street, there was no threat of a harm. Even though that would have been the dark story.
There was a whole scene where she was like upside down in a gutter.
Yeah, but it seemed like a fairly clean experience overall.
You really hated this, didn't you? It's like,
yeah, I mean, nothing, I didn't enjoy it.
Nothing is getting past you. I'm like, wasn't this fun? You're like, no, fascism, horrible.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's put us and the audience out of the misery then. We will be back next week to talk about the end of Oak Street, then Yesteryear, the following week, although maybe not, depending on how much stamina I have.
Yeah.
And yes, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back then. Bye.